Back on the Jefferson Exchange, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Getting from here to there safely is a common preoccupation in America. We like our cars and trucks, but they come with risks. Risks of injury and death. Let's forget the vehicles for a moment and focus on the roads and the infrastructure. Our next guest does, and he's not impressed. Wes Marshall lights a fire under a whole profession just with the title of his book, Killed by a Traffic Engineer, Shattering the Delusion that Science Underlies Our Transportation System. Wes Marshall went beyond PE, professional engineer, to PhD. He's a professor of civil engineering at the University of Colorado, Denver, and the director of the CU Denver Transportation Research Center. So, yes, he's concerned about transportation and working on it. So are you a traffic engineer yourself, Wes?
Yes, I do consider that. So I am shining the spotlight sort of self-reflectively in some sense.
Well, it's right there in the dedication to your book. 88 chapters about road safety does seem like a lot. What was the motivation in doing all this work?
That was a joke my wife made. She's like, when I finally told her what I was kind of working on, she's like, what, 88 chapters? Like, do people really want to read that much about road safety? And the answer is, like, there's a lot to say, and originally it was 100, so I had to kind of cut it back for the sake of publishing, but even with this book, it's 400-plus pages. I feel like there's some stuff I couldn't even quite get to, so it is such a big issue, and it's so undervalued, underthought of in today's society.
Talk about your own choices, though. I mean, complain as you might about traffic engineering, this is not something you wanted to go into on the transportation side of civil engineering at first. Why?
Well, at first, I mean, civil engineering is such a broad discipline. It's a big umbrella. It includes structural, hydrology, geotechnical, and that's one of the great things about it. I mean, even within transportation, that's so broad. You could be doing pavements, you could be doing bike lanes. So at first, I think when people think of civil engineering, they think more structural. They think buildings. And, you know, when I was 18, I thought, you know, maybe someday I'll become an architect, and a structural engineering degree is an interesting way to sort of approach that. And that's kind of what I often do, is I approach things from a different angle than maybe typical. But over time, I started to realize that the structural engineering field, like a lot of it was done, you know, on computers with like finite element analysis. And that you didn't really have to do much thinking. Like once the beam is big enough, you can go bigger, it might cost you more, but it's those kind of decisions. But once I started getting into the workforce and seeing how much more interesting transportation is, when you start involving humans in the thing, you know, just making something bigger doesn't necessarily make it safer, because humans behave differently depending on what you put in front of them. And I started veering in that direction more and more over time.
So it seems like the key quote in the early part of the book is, you say that traffic engineers designed and built a system that incites bad behaviors and invites crashes. It's that bad, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole factor of safety mentality that comes within all of civil engineering, and that is how we design culverts. We make it bigger than we think we might need to be just in case it rains more. And, you know, Mother Nature doesn't care how big you make the culvert. It's going to rain the same amount, let's say. But when you make a road bigger, if people behave the exact same way, it makes perfect sense why it would be safer, but they don't. You give people a big, wide road, they drive faster. People respond to whatever you put in front of them. And that built environment will start enticing people to drive faster. And what's interesting, though, is like when you tell them they're speeding and they got into a crash and you sort of blame them for their bad behavior, like what I'm arguing in the book to some extent is that, no, I mean, to some extent, it's the engineer's fault for putting them in that position where it's sort of enticing speeds like that based on the road under that factor safety mentality. So the onus should be back more on us to see what we can do in terms of engineering to make it better.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that the general thrust is towards straighter, wider, flatter roads, and these are the things that encourage people to use them to that extent.
Yeah, and that was the mantra for 100 years of civil engineering. And I think a lot of us, I mean, when I was taught as a young engineer that they were steeped in 100 years of safety research. And when I dug down all these rabbit holes in my book, that wasn't quite so. It was much more based on capacity of cars, not even capacity today, capacity 20 years in the future. And it's based on speeds, trying to get as many cars as we can through a point. Safety was never our first priority in any of that.
Wes Marshall's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is Killed by a Traffic Engineer, Shattering the Delusion that Science Underlies Our Transportation System. So a central question here is, how different would a well-designed transportation system that relies on science be from what we got?
Oh, it'd be very different. I mean, I think you see the thinking now. Like when you hear about the cities that are, you know, declaring Vision Zero, and it's almost a moral shift towards trying to make sure we have zero fatalities, zero serious injuries in our transportation network. Prior to that, it was much more, the thinking was just sort of the cost of doing business, that these deaths, these severe injuries, it's just what we all have to pay for the price of modern society. And that's not the case. Like, we could do things to design our cities so that speeds are slower and things like that, that where you kind of think about the fundamental physics into what creates those more severe crashes. Because historically we focus more on fender benders. If we do focus more on the actual severe injuries and fatalities, it changes the inputs, it changes the outputs, and it changes what our cities and streets would look like, and they'd be a lot slower. You know, sometimes people aren't willing to wait an extra, you know, 10 seconds at an intersection, but in a lot of cases, that would help us ensure much better safety.
And the result is clear in more modern construction. You describe an experience in Connecticut that I've experienced in lots of other places as well. You lived on a street that you could not reasonably leave without being in a car. And it seems like there are lots of those around the country.
Yeah, and it's funny because I didn't grow up in a place like that. As a kid, I grew up in Watertown, Massachusetts, right outside of Boston, and I could walk or bike all over town as a kid. And I could, you know, take the bus to go to Fenway Park or Harbor Square, and from there I could take the MBTA to go anywhere. I finally moved to Connecticut a few years after college, and it's the first time I lived anywhere where I couldn't leave my street without being in a car, and it drove me crazy. I mean, and that is one of the impetuses for me pushing me in this direction more towards transportation. And at the same time, when I talk to my neighbors, it's like, you know, we see a store, I could see it from the end of my street, but I really couldn't walk or bike there. And my neighbors would be like, well, why don't you just drive? I was like, well, that's not the point. You're like, the ability to, the freedom to be able to choose something different. And none of them understood what I meant. They just thought this is how the world was. And I had a hard time with that.
You give us the sense in the book that traffic engineers do not learn from past mistakes. I mean, have they not reached the point that medicine got to, where talking about things that used to happen in that field make people who are in it now wince?
Well, that's what's really interesting, is I think a lot of, I mean, I thought this when I was a young traffic engineer, that it was. All these manuals were given, you know, oftentimes you take one or two transportation classes in an undergraduate civil engineering program, and then you're given, you know, maybe a half dozen of these 1,000-page guidebooks. And I assume that whoever wrote these knew more than I did. I assume they did their due diligence and looked at the safety. And it's not the case. And when I started going down these rabbit holes, a lot of things weren't nearly as scientific as I thought or was led to believe. So that's where the disconnect happens. I think a lot of the traffic engineers like me thought it was more similar to medicine, where it's more empirical, where we're learning along the way. But what turns out to have happened is a lot of it was based on some initial theories. And we tried some stuff at the early days, and we readily admitted that it wasn't done. But then time passes, and we sort of forget those, there were questions at the beginning. And these things get deeper and deeper embedded into those manuals to the point where we stopped questioning them. And that is what I hope to do with this book, is help us get to a point where we can become more empirical and start questioning sort of the why behind a lot of what we do.
So, Wes, did traffic engineering exist in any sort of organized, rigorous form before personal motor vehicles?
No. I mean, it really started after automobiles came to the forefront, and we sort of figured out we needed a new discipline to figure out how we can do this better. And in the early days, I mean, there was no education program, so people were coming at it from other disciplines, jumping into it. And a lot of times the leaders, you know, this is maybe getting into the weeds of the book a little bit, but some of the leaders in those early days, they weren't engineers. Like, they were like car company CEOs that were trying to come up with ways to help this new burgeoning discipline, but also make cars seem safer. And that is where there was a lot of, I don't know, just troublesome points in the history of this discipline.
Wes Marshall's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is Killed by a Traffic Engineer, Shattering the Delusion that Science Underlies Our Transportation System. Wes Marshall is himself a civil engineer, traffic engineer. Now, you're not the only one suggesting that traffic engineers made mistakes. You tell us the Transportation Quarterly said as much in 1999. Has much changed in that quarter century since?
Yeah, I mean, you can see it in our streets. Like, there is some new thinking. There are younger engineers that, you know, I mean, maybe enlightened is not the right word, but they're more willing to sort of question where we've been, what we've been doing, and, you know, really coming to grips with realizing that what we have put out there in the world isn't what we sold it, what we told people it would be. And I think people were disillusioned in a lot of places in terms of what they expected versus what they were given. And you see that with simple things like congestion. I mean, for the last, you know, 75 years, we've been telling the world that we can fix traffic congestion, and we have failed time and time again. And you see that, I mean, every time we do almost anything, I mean, all the road and highway widenings, we say that we'll fix congestion, but it never does. And I think people are starting to wrap their heads around, well, why? Like, what is happening here? How can we do a better job accounting for that sort of stuff? So it's a tricky proposition, but I do feel like we're heading in the right direction. But I also feel like we need a much more foundational shift. Like, a lot of what we're doing feels like we're chipping away the tip of the iceberg, and we're doing some little things to make our streets better. But what caused that is where we're still having the problem. Like, all the protocols that traffic engineers still use to design cities and design roadways hasn't changed all that much. So, I mean, that's what I'm trying to do to some extent, is hit more of the foundation of that pyramid as opposed to attack the tip of it.
Well, let's talk about that specific point you were just talking about, congestion. I mean, are you coming from a viewpoint where maybe a little congestion is a good thing and that it might convince people to use alternate forms of transportation or something?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of positive externalities when it comes to traffic congestion. When you have a lot of traffic, I mean, not only does it change, like, mode choices and entice people to maybe try something different, but over the long term, it changes how we deal with land use and where you might want to live and where you choose to work and how we build these places. And the way that we do business now is traffic engineering will look at, well, how many cars do we expect 20 years from now? And they'll say, well, if we don't do anything and we just let those cars come, we're going to end up with, you know, 16 or 17 hours of bumper-to-bumper traffic every day. And the reality is that's just not true. People aren't going to sit in traffic like that. They're going to behave differently. Like you said, they're going to maybe change to walking or biking or transit. They might carpool, and they also might try to live downtown or near where the places it is they want to go. So there are a lot of positive externalities when it comes to traffic congestion. And when you look even from the bigger picture, the cities that solve traffic congestion did it by killing their city, like, that nobody wants to be there. Like, that is really the only way to solve traffic congestion other than something like congestion pricing.
All right. So you do spend some time on, we're about 2 minutes from a break here. I just want to warn you about that. We do spend some time in the book on speed governors. Compare how we tend to think of such features on cars versus the thinking in some communities about speed controls on electric scooters, for example.
Yeah, for whatever reason, you know, a lot of cities have implemented the speed governors on the scooters or things like that, and nobody really thinks much about it. But when it comes to thinking about something similar for cars, and not even the type of speed governors that would force you to be below a certain speed, but sometimes it's even the speed governors where it warns you that you're getting over the speed limit, or like the pedal, the gas pedal, gets a little bit harder to push once you hit a certain speed. Like, for whatever reason, all of those things just seem un-American. Like, it seems like they're taking away our freedom to be a dangerous person on the road. And, like, the discussion around those topics, at least in our country, it devolves into those things like freedom and Big Brother, as opposed to being on safety and what it means when you allow folks to drive that fast, and what it means for safety in a country where we're killing more than 40,000 people each year on our roads.
How much has that number changed over time?
Surprisingly, not a ton. Like, there's been times where it's got over 50,000, you know, back in the 60s and early 70s, but then it dropped down to in the mid 30,000s, you know, 10 years ago, but we've been going up and up since then. And, you know, I think whenever we have like a plane crash or a train crash and, you know, 50 people die or something like that, it becomes a national emergency. But like we're killing, I mean, that many people every day. Like around the world, we kill more people on the roads than died in 9/11, but we don't treat it like the public health crisis that it is. It's sort of like a dripping faucet. It's the cost of doing business.
Wes Marshall's our guest. His book is Killed by a Traffic Engineer, Shattering the Delusion that Science Underlies Our Transportation System. We'll come back to the conversation on the Jefferson Exchange in just a bit. Final segment of today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. We are talking about travel, but not in the sense of great places to go or great cruises you can take, but keeping your life with you at the end of the journey, because we're talking to a traffic engineer who is highly critical of his profession. Wes Marshall is a PhD, a professor of civil engineering at the University of Colorado Denver, also the director of the CU Denver Transportation Research Center. His book has a provocative title at the beginning, Killed by a Traffic Engineer, Shattering the Delusion that Science Underlies Our Transportation System. We've talked about speed just a bit, but the nub of the argument here is you say we've prioritized mobility, speed over safety. Can you give some examples?
Well, I mean, you can see it if you walk out your door. I mean, all over the place, you see examples of where we're prioritizing cars over other modes of transportation. And I know in downtown Denver, I have dozens of pictures of just sidewalks that are just missing, that they're incomplete. And this is tough. Everyone's sort of so focused on, you know, maybe transportation and how exciting the future is in terms of technology. But it's hard for me to get super excited about a Hyperloop or autonomous vehicles when we can't even get the sidewalks right. We can't even do that in a major U.S. city. And what we put out there a lot of times is embarrassing. And when you think about what it means in terms of safety, and we fail to provide a sidewalk, and somebody ends up maybe jaywalking because the sidewalk in front of them is just gone, and then they get hit by a car and maybe killed, we end up blaming that person themselves for jaywalking. We try to maybe enforce the rules better, we maybe try to educate them better, but we don't think about the traffic engineer and all this, that we could have provided a safer place for these people to live. And a lot of times it's because our protocols are way more focused on mobility and just moving cars than it is on accessibility and actually helping people access opportunities and places they need to go, like work and friends and school and those sort of things.
So in a system that would be better designed, are you suggesting that there'd be more room for bicycles, more room for pedestrians, perhaps narrower lanes for cars, more on-street parking, things like that?
Well, it depends on the context. I mean, that is what it often comes down to, is the context matters so much in terms of what the design is. And in a lot of places, we're, you know, shoving these more rural highway-type designs right through downtown environments. And that's where you have the mismatch between context. And those sort of places should have what you're talking about in terms of giving people more freedom and the ability to bike or walk or take transit. But there are other places where we don't want or need those options, and it is going to be a more car-oriented environment. So that disconnect is where we need to do a better job of figuring out and designing for the actual people that want or need to use a place.
Well, I have an experience myself that I've mentioned on the air a couple of times. I was staying at a hotel near Dulles Airport in the Washington, D.C. area, and was surprised when I wanted to walk to a nearby store for a bottle of aspirin. There were no sidewalks within about a dozen miles of the nation's capital.
Yeah, you don't have to go very far out of most cities to end up in a place like you're talking about. And I've been to the Dulles Airport. I know exactly what you're talking about. I mean, I was looking for aspirin, but it's a tough place if you're not in a car.
All right, so give the examples of engineer thinking. And by the way, thanks for pulling back the curtain on engineer speak. Like, safety is a shared responsibility. But give the example of safety margins. Like, you know, if we figure travel lanes on roads should be X wide, so then X plus a few more will be safer still. Are you criticizing that thinking alone?
Well, I mean, it's part of it. I mean, and there's so much that goes into what we do, but, you know, this is similar to what we talked about a little bit earlier in that factor safety mentality where, you know, the idea was if, you know, think about a rural highway and, you know, for years, like people would, you know, fall asleep or something, run off the road and hit a tree. So what's the obvious solution is we'll start getting rid of all the trees, start making sure you have a lot of empty space on the side of the road. So if somebody falls asleep, if somebody is even drunk, they can drive right off the road and they'll live. Like that, it does make sense in terms of that. But when you start thinking about what that means, you put that type of design in a city, and you start removing trees from the side of the road, you start removing all that sort of stuff, it entices people to drive faster. And it oftentimes you don't get the same safety benefits that you would in a more rural area. You get the opposite. You actually get much worse safety. So a lot of these things we were doing for the sake of safety, like cutting down those trees and pulling, making sure there's a lot of clear space on both sides of the road, was actually leading to worse safety outcomes.
So if people were to move in the direction that you're suggesting and think very differently about traffic engineering, you still have the situation that traffic engineers tend to work for governments, which are owned by all of us and guided by elected politicians. And I have to believe that those factors get in the way of good traffic engineering, particularly as I've watched a couple of times as we've had several communities in our region go for road diets. You know, they slim down to one lane with wider bike lanes and pedestrian amenities enhanced, and people go nuts.
Well, there's, I think, a couple things happening here. In one case, most cities that have done things like talked about Vision Zero being their priority, they talk about prioritizing pedestrians first, then bikes, and then they have this pyramid triangle that goes down and having cars last.
Vision Zero being zero fatalities?
Yeah. So the places that are saying our goal is zero fatalities in some future year. But what they're actually putting on the streets doesn't match what they're saying their priorities are. At the same time, when you think about, you know, the public response to things, like a lot of times, a lot of people haven't seen or felt or tried these types of designs that we're talking about. And I try to, especially when I teach my students, I try to tell them that design is incremental. Design is iterative. A lot of times traffic engineers will put out their, you know, their best final design from day one, and then they start finding things wrong with it and it's too late. So I would argue, let's use cheaper materials. Let's try something. Let's pull back on what's not working. Let's double down on what is. And if things are actually helping us lead in a safer direction, I think we have to do that. Like, you would never let the public tell a structural engineer that they should use a smaller beam. Like, we know that's a safety thing, and we put those decisions in the hands of the people that are trying to make this building safe for us. For whatever reason, with transportation, we often let the loudest voice in the room push us in a direction that's less safe, and we know it's less safe. And yes, I understand that we want public participation, but we can't let it overwhelm our safety interests.
Wes Marshall's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is Killed by a Traffic Engineer, Shattering the Delusion that Science Underlies Our Transportation System. So if we're doing things that make the roads safer for all people, do we also then sort of automatically have a zero sum thing where there's just more congestion potentially and more frustration among drivers?
Oh, not at all. I mean, that's the funny thing about it. Like, things like a road diet, if we reduce the number of lanes on a street, in an urban setting, it's the intersections that determine how fast cars get across a corridor. It's not the number of lanes on a street in most cases. So when you can add turn lanes and things like that, the intersection, it doesn't actually reduce capacity, and you get cars through just as much. And when you look at sort of the big picture of, you know, I've seen some data showing, you know, if you're driving from a suburb into a city, and if you're going through that city at 40 or 50 miles an hour versus 20, like, your time for your total trip is such a minuscule part of overall time. You're adding like a minute to your overall time. So if we can, like, be okay with adding 45, 50, 60 seconds to our trips and at the same time save hundreds of thousands of lives, it seems like a worthwhile trade-off.
So, Wes, take the really wide view here. I mean, how much of what you're talking about can be blamed on traffic engineers versus our love of our own vehicles, our taste for rural living, planning schemes that put houses far from services. I mean, all of the things that we've done in constructing the American landscape, particularly since the middle of the 20th century.
Well, it all goes hand in hand. And a part of the problem is most people do live in a place where they can't walk or bike, and they've never been given that option. So we're forcing people into a car. So part of it is we need to build more places where you have those sort of options. And, you know, culture and the social aspects of transportation are important, but part of how those were created and manufactured was by the car companies and them selling us this lifestyle and them selling cars as freedom. And for people that their only choice is a car, that, to me, that's not real freedom. I mean, they're limited in so many ways. And, you know, there's an interesting history. You ever read Peter Norton's great book, Fighting Traffic? He talks about America's love affair with a car and with the automobile and how it feels like it's such an organic thing that happened. But he traced back the history, and it was something that was literally created by the car companies on this NBC show of the week, you know, 50, 60, 70 years ago. Like, this was a manufactured thing. And a lot of times we've joined right in and we're all for it, but a lot of people don't know any different. They haven't lived in a place where, you know, the ability to walk to get a coffee or something is in their grasp.
There's some evidence that's changing with younger people who would rather be on their phones and therefore not having to pay attention to the road ahead of them than driving a car. I mean, do you have some hope that perhaps over time that the view of the need for, you know, my personal vehicle will change?
I mean, to be honest, I do like cars. I have a Jeep Wrangler that I've had since the year 2000. I still really enjoy driving, but there are times and places where that makes sense and other times where it's not. I'm in downtown Denver, and me bringing a car here actually makes it harder. It would take me more time to actually get to work than it does when I bike or take the train here, and that's an amazing feeling to have. And I do think a lot of younger folks understand that, and they've seen these sort of places where that is available to them, and they know that it's sometimes nicer if they want to use their phone. They can do it the whole time when they're on a train, and they can't do it if they're behind the wheel, or they shouldn't be doing it when they're behind the wheel, to be more specific. But maybe there's some shift in that. We'll see. I think that kind of ebbs and flows, but I do think, like, even on the traffic engineering side, I see a lot of the younger engineers are starting to understand this a lot better as well.
So we're down to our last 2 minutes or so. And can you give us just some fundamentals, things that traffic engineers and society should be thinking about in how we get safe streets and highways, what the elements of good design are?
It's hard to get down to the nitty-gritty in a couple of minutes. But, I mean, big picture, it's, you know, we have to start measuring what we actually care about. Trying to say that we're trying to solve congestion is the wrong thing. We should be trying to focus on getting people where they need to go. One way to do that is by reducing congestion. Another way is by making all these other modes much safer. And, you know, some of my previous research, it found, you know, I think it's obvious that a city with a lot of transit might be safer than a conventional driving city. At the same time, like, we think bicycling is way less safe than driving, so a city with a ton of bicycling should be less safe. But the funny thing is, those cities where a lot of people are bicycling and we provided that infrastructure for them, those cities aren't just safer for bicyclists, they end up being safer for everybody. Like, those are some of our safest cities around. So the cities that are focusing on those fundamentals, sidewalks and bike facilities, and trying to make it safe for, like, kids to walk to school, like, those are the ones that end up being safer for not just those populations, but for drivers too.
And I wonder how the other traffic engineers are taking your critique of the industry. You know, are they not returning your phone calls?
Well, I just got back from the International Transportation Engineering Conference last week in Philadelphia, and nobody punched me, so that's a good sign.
You mentioned going down the rabbit hole, too, and I just wonder how many issues of Traffic Quarterly from decades ago did you end up reading?
Oh, I mean, I categorized like 2,000 of them, and I organized them by in all these different ways, but I ended up with literally 1,000 pages of notes just from that source. And it was a giant jigsaw puzzle for me trying to figure out how to make heads or tails of it. But at the same time, I love doing it. It was so much fun.
We mentioned 88 chapters on road safety. They're very short chapters, and it's quite breezily written for its length. The book is called Killed by a Traffic Engineer, Shattering the Delusion that Science Underlies Our Transportation System by Wes Marshall at the University of Colorado, Denver. Thanks for sharing this with us on the Jefferson Exchange.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Jeffrey.
And that's it for today's exchange. Outgoing senior producer is Angela Decker. Incoming senior producer is Natalie Golay. Charlie Zimmerman is assistant producer. Incoming host is Mike Green. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.